It's 6 p.m., and you're listening to KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. Welcome to KDNK's Weekly Newsreel, a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday.
The Weekly Newsreel is underwritten by R.J. Paddywhack's Pet Outfitters next to City Market in El Jebel. Open 7 days a week. More info at 970-963-1700 or rjpaddywhack's.com.
I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. And we start off the show with a look at some of the astrology of the moment. KDNK's Raleigh Burley spent some time with Whitney Will, psychological astrologer, writer, and founder of Star Hearth Astrology, to find out more about the world in our stars.
Could you tell us a little bit about Mars joining Saturn in Aquarius and some of the transits that we have to look forward to this summer?
Mars went into Aquarius on Monday, March 30th, joining Saturn that just entered Aquarius about 10 days ago on March 21st. And, you know, Mars is going to add a lot more kind of fire to that transit, but it's really kind of the Saturn ingress into Aquarius that's of big significance. Saturn kind of marks many epochs of time and is just wrapping up about 3 years in Capricorn and now shifting into Aquarius. And I love these two signs. They're both ruled by Saturn in traditional astrology. And I think Aquarius is kind of the only sign that can respond to Capricorn. So Capricorn represents kind of the institution and the establishment, traditions. People like to pin it with the patriarchy. And Saturn in Capricorn gives gravitas to all of those things and kind of heightens the sense of the power of those things. And then also for those of us that feel disempowered, or maybe on the outside of those things, the oppression of those things. Now, Saturn also rules Aquarius. And the way that I picture the switch from Capricorn to Aquarius is that, you know, Capricorn is just this like giant stone building. So like, say, a cathedral in Europe, this big, just old symbol of traditional values and of worldly things. And then if you just kind of blur your eyes for a second and look for the mathematics and the architecture that allows it to stand, that is what I kind of see as the transition into Aquarius. So Capricorn is so much of what is, and Aquarius is the ideas behind what is. So it's kind of stripping the facade off something to understand what the ideological underpinnings of that thing are. And then Aquarius is going to ask, what should they be? And so while Capricorn comes from kind of inside the establishment, Aquarius has the archetype of the exile and the outsider that observes it and makes judgments about what is actually just. So to bring that all back to what's happening right now, the joke that people make about Aquarius is that they love humanity and they hate people. So they do have this humanitarian undercurrent of really caring about what is the best for the most amount of people. But, you know, they're not as cuddly as a Cancer in that respect. And so I think that shift we're seeing, you know, we've kind of, I feel like especially in liberal communities, had this growing distrust of the establishment. And now that Saturn is moving into Aquarius, it's really ready to respond to that. So I think if we zoom in, what we're seeing, the social distancing, it's very Aquarian. We're staying away from each other for the good of the many. So we're going to start responding to the power structures that be. But just because Saturn has shifted out of Aquarius doesn't mean we're kind of done with the power structures that be. So I think Mars moving into Aquarius with Saturn, we're going to see more restlessness around social distancing. I hope that we don't see a lot of aggression, but I imagine that we'll see more kind of restrictions around movement, and that, you know, that that can be quite frustrating for people in general.
Whitney Will recently completed her MA in counseling psychology at Pacifica Graduate Institute and contributes to the Soper Sun. It's hard to say what's in the cards for all of us. The coronavirus is changing fast, as are preparations and preventive actions. Colorado Governor Jared Polis said this week that social distancing is slowing the spread, but that doesn't mean the danger is over. Colorado House Speaker K.C. Becker says lawmakers probably won't return to the Capitol this month.
Her prediction comes after the state Supreme Court ruled the legislature can extend the session past May 6th because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Becker says she is considering holding some meetings remotely during the stay-at-home order, but some of the top Democratic priorities, such as paid family leave and a public health insurance option, could become victims of the outbreak.
A lot of bills will have to wait another year, and what those are exactly, we haven't fully decided, and we want to have conversations with the governor's office on that, but he's really very busy right now in the middle of managing this whole thing.
Lawmakers still have to pass a budget for next fiscal year. Becker says writing it will be, quote, incredibly difficult because the economic projections keep getting worse each week. I'm Scott Franz in Denver.
And I reported earlier in the week that coronavirus has taken a toll on the SB 181 rulemaking process. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission has postponed SB 181 rulemaking and the meetings and public hearings that go with it. Senate Bill 181, passed last year, changed how oil and gas development will be regulated in Colorado, and the COGCC has been revising its mission and rules. The state agency announced last week that it will pause the rulemaking schedule due to the inability to conduct face-to-face meetings. Conservation groups, including Audubon Rockies League of Oil and Gas Impacted Coloradans, Sierra Club, the National Wildlife Federation, Conservation Colorado, and the Western Colorado Alliance, drafted a letter on March 27th stating that they understand the pause but urged the commission to uphold deadlines mandated by SB 181. Emily Hornback, director of the Western Colorado Alliance in Grand Junction, told KDNK that if the pause is extended beyond the next 2 weeks, it should also include oil and gas operations.
We would say that if there is going to be an indefinite pause in the rulemakings that will not comply with the SB 181 mandate to complete them by June, that if this is going to go past what the law mandated, then we would request that all new permitting is paused during that time frame.
According to the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel, COGCC Director Jeff Robbins said any permits approved while rulemaking is on hold will be approved with criteria aligned with the goals of SB 181. The Colorado Oil and Gas Association is in favor of delaying the hearings until they can be held in person. State regulators will review the postponement decision in mid-April. The Aspen Daily News reports that the Pitkin County Incident Management Team is cracking down on the recent public health order that banned short-term lodging. The IMT found out that people recently booked vacation rentals in the area and then sought medical treatment for COVID-19-like symptoms. Those who violate the public health order could face misdemeanor charges, fines, and/or jail time. Officials told VRBO and Airbnb not to accept new non-resident bookings of short-term rentals and to cancel existing reservations within county boundaries. Speaking of rentals, the town of Carbondale has thrown its support behind the 9th Judicial District's suspension of rental eviction proceedings during the pandemic. KDNK's Lucas Turner has more.
On May 17th, James Berkeley Boyd, Chief Judge of Colorado's 9th Judicial District, issued Administrative Order 20-1, which outlines court operations during the COVID-19 pandemic. It includes a section on eviction proceedings, stating that while courts in the 9th Judicial District will accept new filings for eviction actions, they will not be processed in court until June 1st, 2020. So even though the eviction process itself has not been suspended, law enforcement agencies will not facilitate evictions without a legal court order. Local leaders from religious institutions, schools, community, and nonprofit organizations have praised the order, but also say that it falls short, and have asked Judge Boyd to declare an explicit moratorium on evictions during the crisis. In a public letter to the community Wednesday, Carbondale Mayor Dan Richardson explained that while the town of Carbondale does not have jurisdiction over evictions or rent relief, they will continue to advocate for the community.
I think that's where we can provide the most support, is just advocating for the suspension of evictions, which is really the best tool for that.
Mayor Richardson told KDNK that every situation is different and that renters and landlords need to communicate and work with one another.
The landlord needs to understand and communicate with their mortgage lender. They may be more able to provide rent relief. And likewise, the renters need to communicate with their landlords. It's going to be different for everybody. What we do know is that the federal government has recognized this and they've provided some assistance, but none of us really know exactly what that assistance is going to entail. So everybody really needs to know what your situation is and know where it can be flexible and where it can't.
Carbondale's mayor urged landlords to pass on any financial relief they can receive from lenders or the government to their renters. He also says renters who receive any kind of eviction paperwork should seek legal advice. Carbondale's Emergency Task Force has put together a list of resources for renters, homeowners, and business owners. You can find all of that on the Emergency Task Force webpage at carbondalegov.org.
You're listening to KDNK's weekly newsreel, highlighting regional and local stories aired between March 30th and April 3rd, with in-kind support from Rifle Community TV, providing local information and non-commercial programming, including coverage of Rifle City Council, RE2 School Board, the Energy Advisory Board, Northwest Colorado Oil and Gas Forum, and more. Rifle TV is at riflenow.org. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. Ding! Turner also spoke with Becky Larson, epidemiologist for Eagle County Public Health and Environment, to find out about new self-reporting tools.
Usually in disease surveillance, we have traditional surveillance tools. So those are lab results. If you had a lab taken, it could be a physician's visit, where then that information is communicated to public health. However, there's some challenges with that. Not everyone goes to seek healthcare for a condition, including for this novel virus. Not everyone gets tested that have symptoms. That's especially true with this virus. Unfortunately, due to some limitations, whether that's in test kits and protective equipment for healthcare workers, even capacity of healthcare workers to do the testing, or people just don't want to be tested, not everyone will be tested that might have symptoms. So this symptom tracker, kind of self-report of symptoms, provides us with some real-time data around the level of illness in our community so that we can combine that with our lab result data. So that helps us kind of paint a better picture of the disease level in our community at every given time, and helps us make strategic decisions around how to continue to decrease the spread of illness.
How specifically are these tools used in that strategic decision-making process?
I mean, this tool alone, just self-report of symptoms, isn't the only tool used to collect data and to guide decision-making around the spread of illness. But some of those decisions, a lot of them have been made, whether that's through public orders. And then it also helps us see, are these strategies effective? Are we starting to flatten the curve, as you keep hearing, really decreasing that spread of illness, and so that we can get it to a plateau? That's one way we use it. And then there's another way we use this tool, and this is more on the response end, where some people may choose to give contact information or write comments, and we do look at those comments to help us guide our public information so that we can answer questions that people have or identify, there's some concerns about a topic, we need to do a better job of getting out to the public. And then for those that have provided their information and identified as higher risk, we will be following up with them as well, just to check in on how they're doing and making sure that, you know, if people need to be linked to healthcare, they are.
So it sounds like you can list your symptoms in the symptom tracker anonymously, but from an investigation standpoint, would it be safe to say that including more information is better?
The more data people can provide, the better. But again, if someone can just put in their symptoms, then and not put any other information. That's great too, because that gives us a data point of, hey, we have another person that hasn't been tested but is having symptoms. So it's really open to where people feel comfortable. Other people have given us great comments or great questions or feedback, and we read that, and that helps guide our public messaging.
Who should be using this symptom tracker and why?
So that is open to anyone that has symptoms. That includes people that have sought medical care and still want to report their symptoms into this tool, or those that have even been tested and have symptoms, or those that feel like their symptoms are mild, they're just going to stay home until they recover, but they want to be a part of our surveillance and report their symptoms on their own.
I know that the primary symptoms are the ones that we've heard a lot are fever, dry cough, shortness of breath. Are those still accurate? Has that been updated? I guess, what should people be thinking? This may be something that I should report.
Yeah, so those have definitely been updated. What we've been seeing, especially with our lab confirmed, so our known cases of novel coronavirus, is many people start with could be a mild sore throat, muscle aches. Some have reported a loss of taste or smell, and even potentially a runny nose or a headache. Not everyone develops a fever. A lot of people do develop a cough, but not everyone. But usually these symptoms start in that mild part where you think, this might be a cold, or I just don't feel right. And then usually they develop more from there. So any symptoms really is what people should be aware of. And if they're developing any of those symptoms from the very beginning, that's when we really want them to isolate themselves. So for one, stay home, but also make sure you're removing yourself from other people in your household as much as possible. And then as your symptoms get worse, especially if you develop difficulty breathing, feeling lightheaded, you know, we really need you to contact your healthcare provider and talk about those symptoms, because you might need more advanced medical care.
In November, the Garfield County Commissioners called for a 6-month moratorium on new or amended mining and gravel projects. County staff was tasked with developing the 2030 Comprehensive Plan and adjusting the land use code.
Back in November, the board asked us to look at our regulations and work on rewriting them to provide better tools for us as reviewers and for them as decision makers to actually be able to understand projects better.
That's Cheryl Bauer, Garfield County Community Development Director.
At that time, they didn't specifically advise us to go look at 1041 regulations. That came later after we had brought on a consultant to help us with that. We went back to the board in January just to get some general direction on the 1041. And looking at it and discussing how 1041 works with our consultant, we felt that that was probably the best way to go with these new regulations.
Boulder attorney Barbara Green is the consultant to the county on preparing the mining regulation amendments. She told KDNK that 1041 regulations are named for a piece of state legislation from the 1970s.
And it came about at a time when the state was beginning to notice one of its booms of people moving here from other places. And there was concern at the time that local governments did not have the proper regulatory tools they needed to address the growth.
Local governments had minimal subdivision regulations and very few had zoning. Green says that the legislation intended to help governments work with the impacts associated with new growth and development.
The Act lists certain activities of state interest and certain areas of state interest from which local governments are allowed to choose. And if you choose, say, areas around arterial highways is one of them. If you choose that area to be a matter of state interest, you hold a hearing to designate it, and you make findings about why you're designating that, and then you adopt your own permit process and regulations that will apply to that area going forward.
So that's what Garfield County is in the process of completing now. First, it has to approve the expansion of 1041 powers to include mining. Then it will develop the standards to which permit applicants must adhere, such as air quality, blasting, visual impacts, water quality, roads, and other environmental impacts. Green says 1041 powers would replace existing county mining regulations and could simplify the permitting process.
Now, under the county code for an industrial use like mining, I would have to go to 3 or 4 different sections of the code to find out what the hearing requirements were and what the standards were and what the zoning was, whereas 1041 is a standalone document that you can go to that has all of the areas and activities that the county has designated and the regulations that apply to those different areas and activities. So it's all in one place.
Cheryl Bauer agrees.
They pretty much can be standalone in one article. Don't have to go and amend multiple sections of code. We thought a more wide-ranging ability to review projects and really get a comprehensive look at them.
Heather McGregor is with the Glenwood Springs Citizens Alliance, a group fighting the proposed expansion of the Mid-Continent Limestone Quarry. She told KDNK that the county already uses 1041 regulations for highway projects, water and wastewater plants, transit stations, and airports.
So this is not a new way to regulate in Garfield County. It's just a new type of use that Garfield County would be using its 1041 powers to enact regulations.
Discussion about the process began on Wednesday, March 18th, with Garfield County Commissioners and the County Planning and Zoning Commission, and will continue tomorrow night. The Glenwood Springs Citizens Alliance has asked members to write letters to the P&Z, urging the commission to adopt certain standards. But McGregor says this isn't only about the proposed expansion for the Mid-Continent Quarry.
Well, these regulations would govern that project, but they would also apply to any mining operation anywhere in Garfield County in what will be defined mineral resource areas, which take in large swaths of undeveloped land outside the city limits.
Cheryl Bauer says that a few years ago, county commissioners upgraded gravel regulations and needed to do the same for mining regulations.
So at that point, we decided, well, probably a good idea to put a hold on things and really take a deeper dive into how our regulations look, how they perform, and how we can improve them.
The county moratorium on new mining permits ends in June. County commissioners expect to vote on whether or not to approve 1041 mining regulations on May 11th. The public will have 2 opportunities to weigh in on the regulations in late April and early May. And finally, local growers are thinking about the local food supply, and students are talking about what it's like to live in the time of coronavirus. First, KDNK's Raleigh Burley talked to Casey Piscura, owner of Wild Mountain Seeds, based at Sunfire Ranch south of Carbondale. Piscura created the nonprofit Seed Peace to promote community-driven seed production and local growing initiatives for resiliency and health. Here's a clip from the interview.
Could you talk about how your operation here and your thinking is adapting around the insecurity that a lot of people are feeling given the coronavirus and the economic crisis?
I feel kind of as a young farmer that we've been trying to increase people's understanding of the need for local food production. And when we're faced with times where we kind of global scale of our food supply and all of our of the potential pitfalls with that are, is illuminated, we all see the value in trying to build something here locally. With that said, this is growing a big chunk of our food, although I think is totally an achievable thing. Our nonprofit was kind of born around how can we utilize community support, philanthropic donations to really kickstart this movement to where we can have the necessary equipment, the well-bred seed necessary for our climate, and the and then the understanding of what we need to store and distribute food more efficiently in the valley.
Hallie Zander of the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program produced Perspectives of Social Distancing. Here's a clip from the show.
My name is Lily Weber. I'm 16. I go to Glenwood Springs High School, and Andy Zanka was my uncle.
So when did you first find out about COVID-19?
You know, I'm not really sure. I think I heard about it like here and there. The real first time I think I really ever talked about it was my history class. I'm in U.S. history with Mr. Peters at Glenwood Springs High School. He likes to keep up with current events. And I just remember, you know, class by class, it would be like, hey, this virus made it to the U.S. And I was like, oh, well, tell me more. What is this thing? Because I didn't really know much about it. I didn't really know what it was. It was kind of all very sudden that schools started closing. First, my state championship for mock trial got canceled. I qualified for the state championship. I was in the Post-Independent, my entire team, about how, oh, yay, we made it, and then it got canceled. The day we were supposed to leave, I didn't think anything would ever cancel the state tournament. My team and I'm on the varsity team, we worked so hard, and then to have it canceled was so sad. And then, of course, I'm in band classes, and it's been hard, you know, not being able to play with my friends. Our jazz band is a really tight group of friends, and I really love my band teacher, and it was so nice to have two band classes in my schedule every day, you know, the symphonic, like, symphony-ish band, and then there's jazz, and I love both of them so much, and it's hard to not even have my instruments there at school. It's nice to be able to play with people, and it's hard, you know, not being able to meet up with friends because everyone's saying, hey, keep your teenagers at home. And I'm a teenager and try not to hang out with a lot of people.
Do you see any silver lining to this experience and the situation, either changing your perspective or your behaviors on anything?
You know, systems are collapsing. This has never really happened before. It's so worldwide that I think the silver lining in all of this is that we need a change. Things aren't working so well anymore, and we really just need a big change, and we're not doing it ourselves. It's time for nature to tell us, keep us in check, I guess. It sounds weird, but I mean, we as, you know, a human race are messing up this world so much that the world is kind of like pushing back.
Before we go, here's something from ASYEP News reporter Mountain Mace about the Carbondale Emergency Task Force.
The categories are runners, people who make deliveries and run errands for the high-risk population, care callers, who place phone calls to isolated people to check on their well-being, and specialists, people who can contribute specific skills to CETF's 8 lines of effort, health, economy, strategic communications, human capital, finance, technology, advocacy, and crisis response. Those who would like to volunteer should complete the volunteer questionnaire, and community members who need assistance can fill out the assistance request form. Both are available on the Carbondale Emergency Task Force webpage at carbondalegov.org. Or, for more information, call the Carbondale Rec Center at 510-1292.
Thanks, Mountain, and thanks to the KDNK news team and all journalists reporting during this difficult time. That does it for this week's newsreel, KDNK's news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories, aired between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh. Thanks for listening.